Right on. Lang.net 2009, Jason Olson, man. How are you doing?
Good. How about yourself, man?
Doing great.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been on this side of the camera.
Absolutely. You've been doing some great stuff for 10-4. Thank you, man.
Hey, not a problem. It's part of my job, but also part of the passion that's involved.
So, I mean, I remember you were like a Niner before you worked for Microsoft.
And absolutely.
You were always into the language videos, the Going Deeps. You loved the Eric Myers, the Gilads.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're presenting at language conferences, man.
Yeah, and it was a little...
That's amazing.
It was a little intimidating because after, you know, looking up and continuing to look up to Eric so much, I get here and sign up for a language talk to show off some of the language implementation I'm doing with F#. And, yeah, I had to follow Eric Meyer. So that was a little nerve-wracking to sit in the audience and being like, oh, man, because Eric is knocking it out of the park as usual, you know, per use for Eric.
Sure.
So then I had to get up, and it was like, thanks, you know, it's like following Anders or something at PDC.
Well, how did it go? I
mean, it went really well.
Yeah.
A lot of people took away that, hey, they wanted the source code. They wanted to see how this is done. They wanted to dive into F# more.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with a bunch of language geeks like this, implementing a programming language, using F# is kind of their way. Hey, that's a fun thing to learn F# with. So.
Excellent. Now, you also did another talk.
Yeah, I did another talk that was a bit more philosophical or discussion-led on are modern object-oriented programming languages actually object-oriented.
Excellent. Well, that's specifically what I kind of wanted to talk about.
Awesome,
today.
Man.
So, are they?
Well, it's funny because I pose the question, second slide, I'm saying, yes, of course they are.
Uh-huh.
When you talk about object-oriented systems and object-oriented programming languages, there's a lot of variants. I mean, you look at the prototype-based stuff, whether you're talking about modern JavaScript or whether you're looking at the classical, like, self model. And then you have the dynamic, you know, from Smalltalk, you know, and modern ones like Iron Ruby and Python, or I should say Ruby and Python.
Mm.
And then, of course, the C++ and Java and C#. Perhaps my favorite quote is from Alan Kay, the father of Smalltalk, where he says, when I coined the term object-oriented programming, because he coined the term, I can tell you I did not have C++ in mind. So I've always loved that quote. And when you really think about that quote, you can almost look that writing C# or Java code perhaps has a lot more in common with C++ than it does Smalltalk.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it was a fun dive to have a conversation with people on dynamic languages, late binding. Alan Kay is a strong proponent of late binding in everything. Bind as late as possible, because it gives you so much flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So let's talk about object-oriented programming and building composable systems, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in your opinion, like, what do you think object-oriented programming is?
Well,
how would you define it today?
It's evolved a lot, and the problem is that object-oriented has lost a lot of its meaning.
Hmm.
You know, it's one of those things where people ran with it, and, you know, I even see back to people talking about Visual Basic being, you know, object-oriented, as in, like, Visual Basic 1, Visual Basic 2, like, long before pre-existing .NET. And they like to say, you know, hey, that was object-oriented because our controls are objects and we call methods on those objects. Mm. I'm like, well, that's kind of stretching it a bit.
Mm.
Alan talks about how the important part wasn't so much objects, it was messages. So this idea of having very loose coupling, that the problem with having a very heavy, I should say, weakly typed but statically very strongly bound language that's very compiler-driven is the earlier in the process that you have to make those decisions of how everything plugs together makes it harder to change down the line.
Mm.
So being able to more loosely bind all this stuff makes it a lot easier to make your code a lot more flexible to where it can morph over time rather than having to jump through the hoops of the compiler.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it sounds like he's a fan of highly dynamic systems that are also statically typed.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no.
Alan Kay does a lot of the dynamic typing.
So he's into dynamic.
Almost dynamic in everything.
Huh.
And this is where I think it, largely with anything else that's in technology, it's a religious argument.
Yeah.
Where it's pretty interesting working with F#, one of the most common preconceptions or misconceptions I hear about F# is people learning F# and going, man, F# is an awesome dynamic language. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, wait. It's not a dynamically typed language.
Mm-hmm.
You, in, with the very aggressive type inference that F-sharp has, you can write code that's very dynamic in nature. Mm-hmm. But F-sharp is very strongly typed.
And I mean, of course, the reason being that it's a CLR-bound language. Mm-hmm. And CLR has a statically typed system built into the machine.
Yeah.
That's why we had to create a DLR.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
What is it about F-sharp in particular, in your case, that made it sort of easy for you to write a language on top of it?
I think there's a couple features in F-sharp that make it really powerful. The idea of combining language features like tuples, discriminated unions, pattern matching, all that kind of stuff, where I wrote this basic language. It was essentially a modern function modern floating point basic that had first-class functions, higher-order functions. You could return functions, anonymous functions, pass functions, everything.
Awesome, man.
And the evaluator written the kind of the eval apply, you know, because everything boils down to a Lisp eval apply eventually. The eval apply in F-sharp was only about 40 lines of code. So to get that working and to have it actually do some stuff where it's like, geez, I wonder if I can use kind of this Lisp paradigm when writing this iterator and have it work with only 40 lines of code was pretty cool,
Absolutely, man. Yeah. So what does your language look like?
So BASIC is pretty interesting. That's one that was more just a throwaway language. I was talking to Eric yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Because Eric talks about this idea of giving people opportunities to go from being amateur to expert.
Yes.
And unfortunately, with the internet today and blogs and everything, a lot of amateurs, you know, kind of pretend they're experts or think they're experts and put it out there like they are. But the industry has a problem now of trying to groom people to go from amateur to expert. And when I was chatting with Eric about it, he's like, one of the best things you can do if you're an amateur, let's say you want to get into language design and implementation. First of all, never have the expectation that anyone's going to use a language that you write. So that's one of those where the stars have to align to kind of make that happen. So don't expect that to happen, but then write just tons and tons and tons of programming languages to just kind of get the feel for it and to dig into separate concepts. So MetaBasic was kind of the first shot of creating a dynamically typed language that was kind of flexible with first-class functions. The one I'm currently working on is a language called Kaleido, which it's kind of a play off the word kaleidoscope because everything is scope-based. So it's almost like looking at the core JavaScript language where everything is a block. So actually, let me pop up here. So everything in Kaleido is built off of colon and semicolon.
Yeah.
That's really the only organizational primitive that you have in the language. So if I want to create like a what we would typically call, you know, a class,
yeah,
is I could have a loan, and then I begin a block, and then let's say I have an initial amount. I can say initial amounts, and then here I can say, okay, amount equals init amount, and then I can actually declare another block where I can say calc total, and perhaps in here I use the colon to specify another block, and then I pass in, you know, interest or something like that, and then here I can say, you know, just return, you know, blah blah blah, some calculation, and then semicolon to close the scope. Semicolon to close the scope again. Sorry, I'm going to...
Bye, nine guy.
Bye.
Being replaced with code.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Man.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he would be offended. Yeah. And then what's interesting about this is you notice there's no class keyword. There's no function keyword. There's no private. There's no public.
There's no
typing, anything.
Okay.
So then to use it, what's interesting is when you use this, I can say, you know, perhaps I'll say L equals loan, specify $40,000. Then I can actually say print, and let's actually call loan.calcTotal. And then I'll specify an interest of, let's say, 5.25. So when you're using it, it looks like you're using an object. It acts like it to where it's all scoped, but the thing is it's all built around just a simple table where I have a block, that has a bunch of symbols defined in it, which, of course, could contain other blocks. So calctotal, though it's used as a function, really you're just calling another block.
Hmm.
And what's cool about this is you could, if you wanted to, create a block that returns an anonymous block, so you get the higher order functions and being able to do all that kind of stuff. But you never worry about classes, you never worry about functions, you never worry about scoping, any of that kind of stuff. And it supports full closures as well.
Wow.
Yeah, so impressive. It's pretty fun. It's something that why I sat down to see if I could implement this was I've always been intrigued by languages that have very minimal syntax, where the syntax and the meaning of the code is actually built up in the language itself. Smalltalk does that. Mm-hmm. If you look at Smalltalk, there's no, like, if-else keywords. Essentially, an if-else statement in Smalltalk is merely an if-true and if-else or if-false messages actually sent to a Boolean object.
Hmm.
So that kind of stuff. And then you look at other languages like excuse me, like Forth or something like that, where there's really no syntax in the language itself. Because I think programming languages have gotten to a point where, even if you look at C#, there's so many concepts to get up to speed on. Mm. And, you know, I miss those programming languages that were like, okay, let's make it easy to get up to speed on the concepts.
Yes.
You know, take
Agreed.
It very quickly to learn the language, but then, of course, a long time to master it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it is with, another example is if we look at gaming. I love the game of Go. Because the rules of Go are incredibly simple. I mean, you can teach, you know, a young kid the rules of Go in the span of, you know, 30 minutes.
Mm.
But then the strategy and the trying to master it is going to be a lifelong experience that it's just so flexible. And there's just so much stuff to be done.
So, I mean, that actually brings up an interesting question. I mean, the fact of the matter is the more general purpose, the more sort of syntactically rich, semantically rich languages are the ones that have won.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, let's look at Java.
Mm-hmm.
Java akin to C#. Let's look at C++. People forget. There's a lot of C++ out there.
Yeah.
It's not going to go away anytime soon.
Right.
And it wasn't these simple, cool, message-based languages. I mean, Erlang's a very interesting language, still in the same concept of messages being passed around, and, you know, it's a highly concurrent by design.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't win out.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about that.
I'm actually in full agreement with you. I think that programmers, unfortunately, historically, whether it's a marketing side effect, whether it's just a luck side effect, you know, I think it's hard to deny the fact, looking at all the modern, like, popular languages, that developers love syntax. You know, the languages that were syntax-less are the languages, you know, that aren't really used all that much outside of academia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lisp is another one, where Lisp itself, you know, there's no syntax there. And especially that combined with prefix operators is kind of a different frame of mind of thinking. But, you know, developers, I think, get comforted by having an if keyword, a while keyword, and all that kind of stuff. So what if those constructs themselves could actually be built out of the constructive concepts in the language itself? So let's say an if statement.
Mm-hmm.
What if the if statement was implemented in the language itself as an if function that accepted a condition and a body?
Mm.
And then you evaluate the condition, and if it's true, then you execute the body.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff where you're able to build up the primitives of the language out of the core language itself.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think that might be... Well, I think you should play around with that.
I'm certainly going to continue. I mean, according to Eric, I still have about 98 throwaway programming languages to work through. So
what kind of feedback did he give you on your stuff?
We haven't dove into it much. He wasn't able to attend the talk.
Okay.
I mean, he's a very busy guy.
Yes,
and
he is.
Helping you out this week and doing all that kind of stuff. I mean, I look forward to perhaps in the future sitting down with him and showing some of the stuff and being like, okay, what about this? What about this?
All right.
Because the thing I don't have that a lot of these guys these other guys like Eric have is that computer science background.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the typical type theory and all that kind of stuff that comes from a strongly academic background.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that, so I'm getting up to speed kind of in a lot of ways backwards at the same time. So I definitely look forward to getting to guys that have that knowledge.
Sure.
And being able to have them be like, oh, read this paper. Oh, did you think about this boundary condition and all that kind of stuff.
Excellent, man. Yeah. Well, I'm really stoked to see this.
Yeah, I'm excited too. You know, it's not every day that, you know, it's easy to kind of do this stuff. I know certainly getting off the ground with writing programming languages,
mm-hmm.
can be a daunting affair, because especially there's so many different things to cover. You know, first you get into the lexing and parsing, then you get into, you know, the lexical analysis versus semantic analysis, and you dive into combining that with, okay, now you have to implement the actual runtime and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of stuff to really tackle, and if you can provide kind of a guided experience that says, hey, just worry about the typical AST and the evaluator to start. I think it's certainly a fun place to start, and you can get off kind of kicking off the ground a lot faster than
right on, man. Well, thanks for coming on Channel 9.
Yeah, absolutely, anytime.
Absolutely. As you were saying that, of course, Gilad walked into the room.
Yeah.
So he knows a thing or two about programming languages.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right on, man.
Yeah,
nice. Great job, Jason.
Thanks a bunch.
Great to see you.
Yeah, you too.